For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Before we begin, we would like to thank Six Point Builders for their support of our show. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Revolution Recap, part of the Believe Podcast Network. We're coming to you after the New England Revolution defeated the Vancouver Whitecaps by a scoreline of 3-2, keeping them perfect in the month of June. This is just the third time that the Revolution have won three or more straight games since the 2019 season. New England got all of their goals in the first half with tallies from Noel Buck, Giacomo Vrioni, and Esmir Bayraktarevich, while Ryan Gauld scored for Vancouver in the dying seconds of the game to earn his brace. I'm your host today, Andy Judd, and I'm joined to talk about all of this with Tom Pinzone of the Blazing Musket. Tom, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing really well. You know, it's a pretty good weekend to be a Revs fan. You know, the three-game winning streak now for the first time in quite some time. Back-to-back wins at home. Pretty good day, a pretty good weekend to be an Italian-American as well. Ferrari just won at Le Mans for the second year in a row, and the Italian national team beat Albania 2-1 yesterday. But yeah, I mean, just really an enjoyable night at Gillette last night. You know, the Revs, you know, came out and scored three goals in the first half. You know, a team that hasn't been able to score three goals the whole year. And, you know, all around, except for, you know, a couple little hiccups there at the end, it was a really good performance against a good team, which we haven't really seen so far this year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've had a lot of, you know, a lot of our wins have come against teams that have been, you know, maybe towards the bottom of the league, or they've had, you know, injury concerns or international call-ups or what have you. So, you know, to come out and play, you know, what I think most people agree is a pretty good team, and, you know, play them toe-to-toe and actually come away with a win, which is a rarity here in New England, is good. And it was entertaining, you know, the whole time. As a Revs fan, I found it entertaining to watch. And I think probably with five goals for the neutral, it would also be a pretty entertaining one. So we're going to go. We have a lot of questions to get into. We have some key takeaways, of course, as always. But before we jump into all that, I do have to mention BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Finals this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads when the games are being played. So over, head on over to our online casino and get into a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, the game starts here. Hey, with that out of the way, let's get into some key takeaways here. Key takeaways are brought to you by our friends at the Rebellion Supporters Group. Check them out on Twitter at Any Rebellion and on their website, anyrebellion.org. Okay, Tom, let's start with you. What's your key takeaway from this game?
I mean, I think it's a lot of people's key takeaway, just based on what I've seen, is that, you know, Porter has pretty much stumbled into finding you know, this team's best 11. You know, it's happened totally on accident. He of course claimed differently in the press conference last night. He made a reference. He said he told Noel Buck before the game that, you know, hey, this isn't on accident, you know, that he's starting. But I don't think Buck is that stupid. He got an emergency start because Kay, you know, wasn't able to play. I mean, that is kind of the definition of an accident. But of course, Porter has his own definitions for just about everything. But the reality is, you know, Romney came back in. That was not part of the plan. You know, he flipped out at Sam in a press conference and said that Romney wasn't good enough. Well, he's been proven wrong there. Buck hasn't had a look in since April, and that has certainly turned out to look like that was a mistake. Ian Harkes hasn't had much of an opportunity in central midfield because he's been going with Polster and Kay. The two of them were both out, and all of a sudden it looks like the Revs actually have midfielders that understand how to play that position. So, you know, all these things are kind of coming together. And very, very little of it has to do with, you know, with Caleb Porter having some sort of vision that has finally come true. But for us as people that, you know, that watch this team every week, however we've gotten here, we've gotten to a point where they are actually able to win games, score some goals. And it seems like he has a group that he can turn to next week and have the same lineup, for the first time, two games in a row all season.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are all, you know, very, very good points. You know, I do want to mention that he is, of course, changed his tune on Dave Romney in recent weeks, right? He went from saying what he said to Sam in that press conference, which was that Dave wasn't good enough and effectively, how dare you ask, to singing his praises, you know, kind of each of the last 3 weeks. I haven't checked in on the most recent you know, quotes from him post game, but, you know, as of last week, he was talking about how, you know, Romney was very good and, you know, how this pairing with Arriaga it seems to be working out. Not a complete 180 necessarily, but I mean, it sure feels like he's changed his tune, given the fact that he was effectively forced to start Dave Romney. Probably could have used some of that confidence boosting before he had to make that change. And, you know, and we also, you mentioned all those other players. You know, the game that the Revs played last week was won because Ima Boateng came into the game and scored. You know, and that's another player that has really had a hard time finding time in Caleb Porter's system. And, you know, that was, you know, a game where the Revs were short and depleted on wingers. So, yeah, there's a lot of the roster and a lot of the lineups that we're seeing in recent weeks are the way they are mostly because of injuries or international call-ups or general absences from other players. And it's been working out in a way that, you know, is not what seemingly what Caleb Porter wanted to happen at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, even Esmer, you know, Esmer also is only starting because Nacho and Chonkalai are injured. When Nacho was available, he was in over Esmer. And when Chonkalai and Barrera were available, Chonkalai was in over Esmer as well. So Esmer is also only starting due to injury, not because Caleb Porter, is, you know, in his infinite wisdom and vision has been able to see that Esmer is, you know, clearly someone that needs to be in the starting 11 every week.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that actually kind of gets into my key takeaway, which is, you know, I just wanted to highlight, you know, the two younger players on the team that scored last night. Both of them, I thought, had pretty good games, right? You mentioned Noel Buck comes into this game. You know, Caleb Porter can say what it is he likes about what his plans were heading into this game. But, you know, the Revs were certainly a little bit more shorthanded this week in central midfield, with Matt Polster being suspended with a yellow card accumulated. I haven't gotten the full story. Maybe you know more about this, Tom, on Marc-Anthony Kay. I did see that Marc-Anthony Kay was called a last minute scratch, and I don't know if that was due to injury or if that was a coaching decision or what have you. But, you know, we're coming into this game without his two preferred, you know, central midfielders. And Buck comes in and he does, you know, I think what we've seen Buck do at his best, which is, you know, he connects passes. He's good, you know, strong on the ball, doesn't get pushed off the ball too easily. And, you know, he's liable to uncork a shot. And he absolutely puts a screamer into the net in the first half to give the Revs the 1-0 lead early on. He had a 7.6 FOTMOB rating, which was pretty good. He did only play 71 minutes in this one. He did exit with what was later described as cramps. So hopefully he's okay. He'll get back to training and be good to go in the not too distant future. As to the other young player who scored, as you know, I think he was probably a little bit fortunate to score his goal. I think he gets a lucky deflection and it kind of loops up for, to the net. I think that's probably not a super sustainable goal, one that you probably don't make, you know, you don't make 99 times out of 100, but it was a good goal. And I think he played very well for the rest of his game as well. He was two successful dribbles. He was 3 out of 4 on his long balls. He won all of his duels and he completed 94% of his passes on the night. So, you know, the kids did very well in this game. And, you know, Caleb Porter has been hard pressed start the youngsters and has tended to, you know, want to lean on experience instead of getting minutes for these younger players. But I think they both proved themselves last night.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, Esmer, yeah, look, I mean, both of his goals this season have been goals that, you know, you wouldn't expect to go in all that often. But if you have a player that looks like they can consistently, you know, outperform their expected goals and score from places that, that, you know, most players can't score from, you've got to lean on that as much as possible. You know, I mean, this team has leaned on Carlos Hill, you know, scoring goals and providing passes that most players can't play, you know, ever since he's been here. So having another person, you know, another player that can occasionally pull something off that most players can't, you know, that's definitely something that you've got to take advantage of as much as possible, you know, especially with the continued limitations of Giacomo Veroni, who had his, you know, probably his sixth or seventh false dawn in last night's game. And you know, about Buck, I actually thought Buck had played quite poorly when he had played centrally previously this season and last season, and thought he was a much better player when he played out wide. So wasn't surprised to see him have a high quality shot around the penalty area, because that's something that, you know, we've all talked about him being capable of for quite some time. But as far as him playing centrally, I thought that was by far his best performance. He actually looked comfortable on the ball. He was able to, you know, be face forward on his first touch, whereas before, you know, I felt like it took him, you know, 2, maybe 3 touches to receive and get himself turned around. So he looked much, much less awkward, much more effective centrally than he has previously. And again, you know, there's absolutely no reason to bring Kay and Polster back in next week based on how Buck and Harkes played.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable thought. And I probably would continue to roll with those two until we see that, you know, there are deficiencies that are not being overcome by what they bring in terms of connectivity in the offense. You know, I think you probably lose a little bit of, you know, just defensive strength without Polster or Kay in there. But you more than make up for it, in my opinion, especially having watched last night's game, with their ability to link up with each other, their ability to link up with the wingers and the forwards and keep the ball moving. And I think that, you know, I noted in the first half that the Revs looked like a team that was, you know, that had better off the ball movements, were making smarter passes, were making quicker passes. And I think those are all things that, you know, those two players were very involved in terms of buildup. You did mention briefly, and I wanted to touch on it because I can't let expected goals just go past without talking about them. You know, I did a midweek preview show about this game, and I talked about the key stat for the Revs was that only two players were performing their expected goals so far on the season, and that was Carlos Hill and Ima Boateng. And then the rest of the team was underperforming. I do want to note that the Revs didn't generate a ton of expected goals in this game. It depends on which source you're looking at. If you're looking through Optostats, the Revs generate 0.1 expected goals, which is about on par for what their season long average has been. It is a little bit higher through MLS soccer. I don't know how they do theirs. I think there's probably is some sort of hybrid about expected goals on target versus expected goals. But the Revs had 1.29 expected goals per MLS. Worth noting that if you look at MLS soccer's expected goals, the Vancouver Whitecaps actually won the expected goals battle in this game. They had 1.39. So yeah,
I don't understand why MLS comes up with, like, they do their own math. I mean, it's like, anyway.
Yeah, no, I don't understand, you know, and they're not clear about how they're coming to those numbers. I mean, none of these expected goals numbers are coming, you know, no equations that they're just showing. So it's all kind of hidden behind a shroud of mystery, but you know, you kind of pick and choose which sources you like the best. It seems like we'll use Opta. So that's, you know, generally where I go with it. But you know, worth noting that the Revs generated 1.1 expected goals. They scored 3 goals, which, you know, I think that was kind of a thing even going into previous seasons under Bruce, right? Was that this team was, you know, would overperform their expected values, overperform their expected numbers, both offensively and defensively, right? With Petrovic and Turner in net certainly helping to, you know, decrease the actual goals allowed versus their expected goals allowed as well. But, you know, this team has kind of always been, in the last couple of years, players that are, you know, talented enough to overcome expected goals numbers, right? You know, you can think of expected goals as, you know, the expectations. So you either overperform by luck or you overperform by skill. And I think a lot of the times we've seen the Revs sustainably overperform that. And I think that's probably more due to skill. And so having players like Esmir, like Nolbuck, who can, you know, get goals from, you know, lower percentage spots, I think that's going to be pretty crucial in terms of the Revs being able to continue to pick up points. I didn't see anything last night that made me think this is a dominant offensive team. You know, they scored 3 goals. Usually a team that scores 3 goals is, you know, dominating offensively. I didn't think that was the case, but I, you know, they got good shots. They took good shots and they scored on low percentage opportunities. So I think if you're going to, you know, if that's your method of you got to find more opportunities to shoot for players like those.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Veroni, I mean, you're going to, you know, he seems to be a one in every 4 game goal scorer. And, you know, I think that the team is just going to have to, they're just going to have to live with that for the time being.
Yep, and we have you know, we have a couple of questions about Vrioni, so I won't spoil always those too much, of course. Okay, I guess that, Tom, are you ready to go into some listener questions?
Oh yeah.
All right, great. So our listener mailbag is brought to you today by Subchuck Law. You can find Subchuck Law's website in our show notes. Today with an email question. This one comes to us on via email from Dave Capone. And the question is as follows. I'm thinking about the Kessler suspension leading to Romney being back in the lineup and a late K injury giving Buck a start, as well as a point that was made on the pod last week. Realistically, how many more potential opportunities are there for Caleb to be forced to do something he doesn't want to do that immediately makes the team look better? So any thoughts on that one, Tom? It seems like, you know, it kind of gets to your point in your key takeaway, which is that, you know, the lineup changes that seem to have worked out for us. It seems like Caleb Porter was forced into those. Are there more chances for that to happen, or do you think that this was close to an optimal lineup?
I mean, you know, the only two that are left really would be something forces him to play somebody else up top because, you know, he's just gonna stick with Veroni unless he has a reason not to, whether it's yellow card accumulation or an injury. His form doesn't seem to have any bearing on whether he plays or not. And every time he has a string of of, you know, three poor games in a row, and people are really, you know, getting on his case about his poor performance. He pops up with a goal, and then we get this, we get the false dawn week where maybe this is him turning a corner and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that corner has never been turned. And then the only other one really is Ivicic. You know, I think a lot of people just decided that Ivicic was this, this fantastic goalkeeper and a clear upgrade over Ravas. And, you know, I haven't felt that strongly about, about that to this point. And last night, those two goals, pretty bad. He didn't move on either one. Not that he didn't save them. I mean, he literally didn't even move. He just stood still.
Yeah.
I mean, so maybe something happens with Ivicic and Ravas gets back in and is able to reassert himself, because Caleb has said publicly that, you know, Ravas is effectively done as a starting goalkeeper, but he's got a 3-year contract. So that's kind of an interesting situation. And then if Veroni ever got hurt or suspended with yellow card accumulation, you know, Porter would have to come up with something else for that game, and maybe that would work out too. And then he can turn around and take credit for everything.
Right. Yeah. I mean, let's dig in a little bit on Ivicic, because we got a couple of questions about him. So I have one here from Steve on Twitter that says Ivicic gives and he takes great saves and bad decisions. Does he learn from this? We also have one from Traeger on Twitter that says, what was Ivicic doing on those? They both should have been contested and probably stopped, but he froze. So I think, you know, we touched on that. Both goals, if you go back and watch the highlights, the first one, I don't know how you saw this in the stadium, Tom, but I almost didn't know it went in, right? Because he didn't react to it at all. And in sort of in a way that, you know, a goalkeeper doesn't react when the ball is about to go wide. And so, you know, I saw the ball go past him, and then it bounced around. It's hard to see from my angle on in the stadium if, you know, it's behind or outside the net, or if it's in the net. But like, I didn't register that as a goal until, you know, I saw Vancouver running off to celebrate. So, you know, just
I don't think anyone, I mean, there was almost no reaction from the crowd. I think everyone just saw the ball come in and then saw Ivicic not even move, and like your initial assumption there would be, oh, okay, well, it just went wide. Because you do know, obviously, if you go to games often enough, you do know that depending on where you're sitting, there are shots that they look like they've gone in, but they've actually gone just wide on the other side of the netting, and you know, you can't necessarily tell from where you're sitting.
Right.
So, like, no one reacted, including the goalkeeper. Right. But look, that was a good header. Right. First of all, it's a good header. It's a good cross. Harkes had it covered. You just, you know, but the second one, I mean, I'm sorry. You froze on a shot from 30 yards like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it looked to me, you know, on the first one, it's a header. It's not like a point blank header. It is further back in the box. There is, you know, I think there's time for him to make a reaction save if he's keyed in. You know, it almost felt like he got caught ball watching, or, you know, he wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, he was caught flat footed. I don't know. But the lack of reaction at all was certainly kind of strange to see, you know, just someone had the ball from, you know, it was probably 10, 12 yards out and to make no reaction as it just kind of like goes by you. The second one, you know, listen, it's a phenomenal shot by Ryan Gault. Amazing from that distance to be able to have that much power and have it that part of the net. But, you know, I watched back on the replay and he takes like two steps. Like he adjusts his feet twice as that ball is coming through. And I don't know if he is screened from his angle and can't quite see the ball, or if he thinks it's going over. But in either case, you have to make some sort of an attempt to stop it, right? You've got the time. The ball, you know, was in the air for long enough that most keepers have enough time to make a reaction to get up and attempt to save the ball.
More than enough time. I mean, he kind of flinched to the opposite side, but like from that, Kalen Carr tried to say that it knuckled, and that's why he didn't save it. It's like, that is, you're doing Ivicic a favor by even suggesting that. That shot did not knuckle. It was straight, and it didn't go in. It didn't go into one of the corners either. I mean, it was the expected goals on target for that was 0.2.
Right.
He just stood there. I think, I think he thought it was, I mean, well, you know, we'll never know, obviously, but I think he legitimately thought it was going to go over and just stood there and he looked like an idiot.
Right. That's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Tough thing to be wrong on. And the first one, I just, you know, people talk about how incredible Ravos is, how incredible Ivicic is. He reacts late to just about everything. Like people need to start looking a little closer here. Like, he reacts late to almost every single shot. So he makes it look like a better save than it actually is. There's been a couple like softballs basically tossed in there, and he jumps late and everyone goes, oh, wow, look, he had a full stretch there. Well, he wouldn't have had to stretch out fully if he'd read it better. The ball routinely hit. He drops balls on a regular basis. There was a save last week that it was rolling in. He spilled that one. The first save he made last night, he was lucky there was no one there for the rebound because he dropped that one too, because it almost looked like it bounced off his shins. His reaction times are not great. You can certainly see how he can have hot and cold streaks and why he got dropped to the last place that he was at.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I do want to point out that he did have at least a few saves that looked good, where his, you know, to your point, right, he's diving when he probably should be in better position. But he does a good job across his goal. There's a shot in the 34th minute from Brian White that is, you know, right at the goal mouth. And he does, you know, a good job shifting over as that ball comes across to stop it. That one had a 0.95 expected goals on target at the point of shot, and it is right on the goal mouth. So that's, you know, I think he's due a little bit of credit for that one. But those two goals he lets in, those are real head scratchers, and they don't make a ton of sense unless he truly believes they're not going to make it into the net. And even then, you know, I don't know how. I'm not a soccer coach. I'm not a goalkeeper's coach. I would imagine that if, you know, they're coached that if it's, you know, even close in the goalkeeper's mind that you dive to save it anyways. But you know, I don't know.
It depends. Some goalkeeper coaches will tell goalkeepers, like, you know, you've got to like go for it no matter what, which doesn't really make any sense. Like, I've also heard goalkeeping coaches basically say, like, if you don't go for it, you have to be 100% sure that it's going wide. And if you're 99% sure, you go. Because, you know, the thing you see goalkeepers do quite often is they start to go for it, right? And they realize, oh, this is going wide. And then they pull their hands back and they let it go out. That's a lot smarter, right? Like, go for the save and then realize, oh, okay, this is going wide of the post. And then you pull your hands back so you don't give away a corner. But, you know, they were both pretty bad, to be honest. I don't know. Let me ask you this way. If Ravos had done that earlier in the season, he would have been crucified on Twitter, and Porter would have came out in the press conference and absolutely hammered him. But Ivicic is one of Porter's, you know, chosen players, so he doesn't get the criticism. But if that was Ravos, we would have had 20 Ravos questions today.
Yeah, right. Part of that is, you know, possibly due to the fact that Ravos had the unfortunate job of being the goalkeeper immediately following last year's debacle. You know, we're a couple of goalkeeper choices into the season at this point, so I think people are a little bit more lenient on Ivicic than maybe they would have been if this were still Ravos in goal. But yeah, certainly criticism is earned here, especially with those two goals last night. Let's move on here. I think you touched on this a little bit in your key takeaway, but here's a question from Paulo S. on Twitter that says, and Porter gives up on Polster and Mark Anthony K pairing in the middle.
I mean, he's been talking about continuity all season and wanting to put out the same lineup week in and week out. And if Buck is fine, he actually has the opportunity to play the exact same team next week that he played this week. And there's no reason not to. There's absolutely no reason that Harkson and Buck shouldn't be in there right from the start, based on how, not just how the team play, but how they play. Like, all of a sudden, you know, when you put two players in central midfield that have good technique and are willing to get their head up on their first touch and play the ball forward, you know, they move the ball quickly, not just connecting passes, but the speed at which they made decisions was noticeably improved over Polster and Kay. You know, Polster and Kay are just, their decision-making is just, it's slow. They take an extra touch. They hesitate. Harks and Buck, and then even when Andrew Federal came in, no hesitation. Get the ball, someone's open, give it to him. That's how you play in central midfield. You've got to be, you've got to be quick with your touch, but you've got to be quick with your decision-making. It's not about, your physical speed or ability to cover ground, and Buck and Harks actually, they actually seem to understand what a double pivot is. They actually put the pivot in double pivot. When one of them stepped out, the other one dropped back, which, is not like a complicated concept to understand, but Polster and Kay very clearly don't understand it. The two of them just vacate the middle of the field all the time. So even defensively, you saw the two of them have an understanding with one another. So unfortunately for Kay, I think Kay is going to have a bit of bad luck here because he picked up a late injury. His fate is going to be lumped in with Polster because the two of them go out. These two guys come in and all of a sudden they look like a team that can move the ball centrally and make things happen. And we haven't said that all season, even when they've won previously.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I do want to touch quickly on a question here from Ryan Duplessis because I think it fits in with what we're already talking about. And he says, does Porter repeat this starting 11 if Buck is okay, or is it back to the same old stuff? I think you kind of answered that one, Eddie. I would hope to see him continue to roll that midfield pairing out. Like, I agree. I think that, everything, in the first half and you touched on it there. I think that all of the passing was just, it was quicker, right? Everything was, there was less waiting on the ball, less to see things develop around you. Because when we, if you're going to play, theoretically the way Caleb Porter wants to play, which is possession heavy style, the longer you sit on the ball, the less time, those passing windows and opportunities, those close pretty quickly, right? Most teams are wise to what Caleb Porter's teams typically like to do. And, if you can close down the passing lanes and you can get yourself kind of set, the Revs and previous Caleb Porter teams, really, they didn't have a ton of ways to break you down, effectively with, their death by a thousand passes method. So, having a little bit quicker decision making from whoever's in central midfield is, I think, probably a benefit to this team. I would hope that we continue to see the same lineup again. As to whether or not Caleb Porter will see it that way, I'm not. Okay, we have a question. I think Porter touched on this briefly. This one's from Mike Kennedy on. He says, what did you think of Farrell at the six? Is something with Porter sticks with to lack of Polster and Kay? So I guess that presumes that Buck would be unavailable or maybe not. But what did you think of Andrew Farrell at the six? And do you think that's something that could continue?
Physical speed is I would say of the least importance in a defensive midfield position than it is almost anywhere else in the field, right? The back line has to be able to drop. The wide players obviously have to be able to get up and down the field. Striker has to be able to run in behind. But the center mids, don't necessarily have to be the fastest players on the field in terms of their pure ability to run from point A to point B. Farrell, they didn't have too much to do defensively in that phase of play, but he was where he needed to be defensively. He made himself available to get on the ball when they had the ball. He was out there for 19 minutes, and he was 21 of 21 on his passes, two passes into the final third. He completed the only long ball he attempted. He completed the only cross that he attempted. He was just quite, he knew where he was going to go with the ball before the ball came to him. There was a couple times where the ball came from, I think it came from like Jones out wide, right, and just one touch, and he knew where he was going straight away. Okay, I'm going out to, you know, I can't remember whoever it was at that point, out wide on the left. You know, so that's something that even, you know, Farrell showed that he was able to do. Look, I'm not going to get caught with the ball on my feet. You know, you can't do that as a center back. You can't do that as a center mid either. He was, again, I think that's something that Polster in particular, and Kay as well, they don't know where they're going with the ball while it's traveling to them. And that makes a huge, huge difference. If you have to make sure that you get a clean first touch, if you have to make sure that you receive the ball in the first place before you start looking where you're going with your pass, it's just, you know, at this level, it just slows everything down. And Farrell showed that, you know, along with Harkes and along with Buck, that he's capable of knowing where he's going to go. And that speeds things up tremendously, because you're already positioning your body to, the second this hits my foot, boom, I'm going out wide again, or boom, I'm playing it back to the center back, or, you know, Polster and Kay just don't have that ability. And it's not a technical thing, that their technique doesn't help them for sure. But yeah, I thought Farrell did well. And that's the second time in a row that he's come in late on in the game in that position. So if Porter is kind of thinking about using him as a, you know, a more defensive mid, you know, late in games to try and hold on to leads, because that seems to be the one thing that he does do, is he brings players, you know, Mensah had that closer role for a couple weeks. It seems like maybe Farrell's going to be the midfield closer.
Right. Yeah, I mean, right, that we've seen that now a couple of weeks in a row from Caleb Porter's have a lead late. He's bringing in defensive-minded players to, you know, help shore up the defense. We actually have a couple of questions about the defense, so let me move those to you now, and we can kind of touch on how we were defensively. So we have one here from DC on Twitter. Best performance of the season, Buck and Ezra. Heel was all over the place. I'd say that Arriaga has definitely been the reason for our improved play. His passing and dribbling out of the back have been amazing. What do you think? And then this is a little bit unrelated, but we do have a question from Steve McGrogan on Twitter, which says, how good was it to have Jones back? So, you know, you can touch on either of those, Tom, if you want, but, you know, let's take a minute and talk about how the defense performed.
Yeah. I mean, look, Arriaga, sure, he gets some of the credit for the team's, you know, improvements. He is a good player on the ball. I think he's also kind of cleaned up, you know, his defending. And, you know, his first couple games, maybe he was a little rusty because he wasn't getting much playing time at, you know, wherever he was at before he came here. You know, giving away some fouls, and it was maybe a little heavy-handed, you know, getting his hands on players and that sort of thing. So I think he's cleaned up his defending a little bit, his attacking play. You know, yeah, his attacking play has been really good. But again, you know, the thing is that, not to get too carried away here, is that Romney allows Arriaga to be that player on the ball that can carry it forward into the midfield and that can make things happen. Or he also allows Arriaga to take, you know, Arriaga takes a lot of risks defensively, stepping out into the midfield to put pressure on a player. There was a couple times early on where, you know, they got caught out. Arriaga got caught out, you know, at the back by himself. And if it, you know, if it wasn't for Romney able to scramble back and, you know, and kind of clean things up, you know, Arriaga wouldn't be looking as good as he does. So yeah, has Arriaga played well? Sure. He gets credit for that, obviously. But also, you know, he puts himself in situations that, you know, he exposes himself, and Kessler just, you know, wasn't able to cover for him anywhere near as well as Romney. So I think it's the partnership at the back that has really allowed Arriaga's attacking play to look as good as it had.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, those are all great points. I watched a couple of moments last night where I thought Arriaga was, you know, he's a little uncertain defensively. You know, he had a couple of what I thought were, maybe suboptimal touches with the ball in the defending box, right? Trying to get out of pressure. But, you know, he definitely brings something to the attack, right? Seth Maycomer on Twitter posted a clip of him carrying the ball forward. He beats a defender and brings the ball into the attack. And, you know, having defenders that are capable of, you know, dribbling and pulling the ball into the attack, right, and just adding an extra body, keeping one of your midfielders available, in moments of transition and attack like that, that's always going to be, you know, an advantage in the attack, you know. And, you know, theoretically, he still has to be able to get back and do the work defensively. I thought he was fine last night. I thought he was, you know, he was A-okay. On the Jones point as well, because, you know, I think we have seen a world without Jones. It is it's not quite as good. You know, I think Jones has been, you know, he spent a little time here kind of getting reacclimated and getting back up to full after he was injured earlier in the year. But I think there's no question having a fully healthy DeJuan Jones with his speed, you know, with his strength on the ball, I think those are things that were sorely missing from the Revs while he was out. And I think that probably bodes well that he's back. And, you know, if we can get, you know, Brandon Bye back on the other side of the field, anything close to what he was, you know, at his peak last year, I think, you know, that will only help more. Do you have any thoughts on DeJuan Jones' play?
Yeah, I think DeJuan has been great. I mean, it's not surprising, right? Like you said, it's good that he's back. But again, it's Romney's the one that makes this whole thing tick, because he covers for Jones, because, you know, they're on the same side of the field, so he's aware of where Jones is, and he's aware of where, you know, Harkes and Buck are. You know, he knows where everybody is on the field, and then decides where he needs to be based on that. So that allows Jones to be, you know, getting forward and attacking. Again, it allows Arriaga to take his chances, you know. And so, it's great to have Jones back. It'll be great to have Bye back. And, you know, that's not a knock on Lima. We'll probably get to someone's weekly question about, they're obsessed with Nick Lima being a human being that plays soccer. But, you know, Romney's the guy that makes this whole thing tick. But even then, too, just kind of going back to, like, when Jones goes forward, when Arriaga goes forward, you know, Harkes and Buck looked a little bit more understanding of if the back line is starting to all pour forward, well, then one of us has got to kind of hang back and make sure that we can provide cover as well, which, again, is just, you know, Polster and Kay, just their defensive understanding has just been so, so poor.
Yeah, and I think that is reasonable. So I have a couple of quick questions that I think touch on what we're talking about. So the first one relates to Andrew Farrell before we switch off of Andrew Farrell entirely, but it's also related to Jack Peniotu. The question's from Kyle Ekstrom on Twitter, and it is, why is Jack not in Rhode Island when he can't get into the midfield before Andrew Farrell? So any thoughts on where Jack Peniotu his team and why he wasn't a substitute in this game, if he's not going to be or if he's going to be here instead of Rhode Island?
Yeah, I mean, it made a tiny bit of sense to call him back last week because they were really thin on players, but he didn't even play. And now Buck and Esmer are back, and it doesn't look like he's going to play at all. And so he's now missed out on probably, you know, 180 minutes playing in the USL Championship in the last 2 weeks to play 0 minutes for an MLS team. So, you know, it's just such a short-sighted decision to call him back. And I'm really surprised that Anolfo, you know, he should put his foot down and say, hey, look, Caleb, you know, you're just going to have to figure something out for a week. Like, you can't seriously ask me to call back a really talented 20-year-old player that is getting minutes at, you know, a second division level and is doing well. Like, you really can't ask me to call a player back to sit on the bench for one game. But obviously, you know, Anolfo, you know, I mean, he's not a Rhodes Scholar either. So I just really disappointing how they've handled that situation. And hopefully next time they come across this type of situation, hopefully Anolfo tells him, hey, look, last time we did this, we brought Jack back and you didn't even play him. So, no, we're not bringing guys back from loan so they can sit on the bench and not play. But, like, specifically last night, like, well, it has nothing to do with Andrew Farrell. Andrew Farrell is a player that spent his whole career playing as a defender. So he came into a deep midfield position to try and help close out a game for 20 minutes. Jack Pinayuto is not a deep defensive midfielder. So I get what he's trying to say, but at the same time, like Farrell coming in instead of Jack, I wouldn't characterize it in that way.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that was the point that I was going to make, which is that, you know, I don't think that Jack Pinayuto is probably the right sub to make time for that position. So, you know, I don't necessarily fault him for going that direction in the game, but I would agree, right? You know, you have a young player who's, you're trying to develop, you're trying to get, you know, minutes for, or at least that, which I think is the idea when you loan him out to Rhode Island FC, where he had gotten some minutes and had looked good, right? You know, playing more time at a lower level, getting some experience and just getting, you know, minutes to help him develop. Calling him back just to sit him on the bench a couple of weeks in a row is not a great look. I would be hopeful that if the situation comes up again, and there's an opportunity to bring a player back from loan who's developing, you know, that there would be some sort of assurance made that they would actually be used or actually be needed instead of hampering what was a good run of games for Jack P over there.
Just quickly, Damian Rivera is also the other player that's on loan. He's on loan with the Tampa Bay Rowdies, who are also in the USL Championship, and he scored a stoppage time game winning goal last night for them. It was like a outside of the right foot volley at the left post to beat the keeper and win the game. So, that's the kind of thing that, you know, that's why you're getting these guys out on loan. You know, Rivera's not been doing as well as Jack did at Rhode Island, but he's coming off the bench and he's getting like 20, 30 minutes a game. He's having a bit of an impact. So, he's possibly developing into someone that maybe, could come back to this team next year and kind of be a spark off the bench, kind of someone like a Emma Boateng type player, if he's not able to kind of develop into a starter at the MLS level. You certainly want your young players out doing that sort of thing, right? Scoring game-winning goals, packed house down in Tampa Bay on a Saturday night, as opposed to, sitting on the bench.
Yep. Yeah, that's all good points, right? Different players develop at different, in different ways and at different speeds. And so finding the match that helps them the best way that you can is critically important if you're going to keep players around and you're going to have an academy that produces players that eventually play for the first time. Keeping players from your academy and just plopping them down at the end of the bench and, just saying, they'll practice with us and that's it. That's probably nothing if you're actually hoping to develop these players into full-fledged contributors. There's a question here now, jumping back a little bit. I think this question is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but it is about the defenders. This one's from Soccer Dad on Twitter, and it says, it's been about a month Kessler got a start. I guess just overall, what would he have to do to kind of get back into the starting 11? That wording is a reference to the question that Sam Minton asked of Caleb Porter in that press conference, several weeks ago, he got rather snippy with Sam and, kind of refused to answer the question and then threw, Dave Romney under the bus. That was what the question was about. I guess let's dig in just a bit. Do we think that, that Henry Kessler is a player that's going to be, in contention for the starting line, that this center back pairing has earned Caleb Porter's trust?
Well, it's probably, and look, I don't think anybody, well, maybe some people, I don't want Kessler to come back in the starting lineup. I'm perfectly content that he's been dropped for Romney. And Arriaga is certainly a superior player on the ball to any of the center back options that the Revs have. But, as usual, the thing that is going to possibly force this is Arriaga is on 5 yellow cards now, but he will avoid you get suspended for one game after you accumulate 5 yellow cards. However, it looks like he went 5 games in a row without a yellow. So I believe that would have removed one from his total. Right. But he does have four yellow cards in the last five games, which again is something he's going to, you know, that's something he's going to have to clean up because he's inevitably going to pick up another one. And to be fair, by the way, the one he got last night, that was pretty soft. That was their fourth MLS game. And I don't think they'll be getting the fifth one anytime soon. That was by far the worst refereeing performance I've seen all season. But nevertheless, I don't think yellow cards get rescinded. So he's got four in the last five games. So he's on a tightrope now. He's going to try and go five games without getting a yellow, or he'll get a suspension. And you know, that's probably what would bring Kessler back in.
Sure. Yeah. I don't have the rules in front of me, but right. If you get five yellow cards, you miss a game. I think that resets your counter. But also if you go a certain, I think, four or five games in a row without collecting a yellow, it removes one from your accumulated tally in terms of suspension. So, he's a player that I think will have four on his accumulated yellows, tracker. And, so the next one could be the one that takes him out of a game and puts Henry Kessler back in. But to answer the original question, I think that Porter is pretty well set on his center back pairing. Right, he talks a lot about continuity, so this would be a place where actually applying that continuity mantra would be useful here. Let's shift, Tom, to talking about the attack, because we've spent a little time. It makes sense to switch over to the attack. We got a couple of questions, some of them about Vrioni, some of them a little bit more general, but I'll just kind of run through them and we can kind of address it on that. Big John on Twitter says, it was pretty entertaining to watch, even though Vrioni scored that goal. I hope Porter is looking for better options. We have one from Alan that says, if you could only make one signing the summer transfer window, would you go for a forward or for a central midfielder? So kind of touching again on at least a little bit there. There's one here. I've lost it now. There it is, from Corey Capucha on Twitter. That says, do you think the Revs should stay at a striker for this upcoming window, or perhaps look at trying to acquire a number six, maybe both? So that touches on Vrioni as well. So, Vrioni gets a goal in this game. He looks like a player who gets a goal in the way that we have, basically the only way we ever see him really want to get a goal, which is, the ball is rolled in behind. He has to take like two or three touches with it in behind the defenders and kind of rattle a shot off. Do you think that do you think that it's still important to look at getting a forward in the summer transfer window? Or do you think that, the play is indicative of any sort of more utility from him?
No, I mean, we've talked about this many, many times that that's Vrioni's very small wheelhouse. He made a short run from the top of the 18 and he only had to touch the ball once, and he didn't really have time to, didn't have time to think about anything. Didn't have time to consider his options or what to do. It was just, oh yeah, the ball's there. I only have time to hit it, so I hit it and he scores. I mean, right? We've talked about that probably five or six times. That is the way that he can score. And unfortunately, it's one of the hardest situations to create. You look at some of the other times the ball was played to him with his back to goal inside the penalty area. He turned. He got a shot away, but it was blocked. You kind of maybe should have had an idea that there was a defender there, considering that you could feel him, on your back. And then he almost got in the way of Buck's shot as well. Right. I mean, so when he has time to kind of consider his options, he tends to make bad decisions. And the thing is though, right, Bobby Wood didn't make the bench again last night. So there isn't even an alternative that Porter can turn to. Chonkalai is also injured. So going into the season, we're like, okay, Vrioni kind of is what he is. Maybe Bobby Wood can have another injury-free season, which was, kind of just clinging to hope there. And then, a lot of people thought, well, if it gets right down to it, then Chonkalai can chip in up top from time to time. But Chonkalai, it sounded like he's going to be out for a long, long time. His season might be over. Bobby Wood, can't stay fit. So they need somebody there to at least put pressure on Veroni, if nothing else. And if he does get injured, you know, they don't really have anyone to turn to up top. So I think that's I think that's the priority. They've got to find a way to slide somebody in. I think the easiest thing is whether you get another buyout that doesn't affect your cap or not. You know, I mean, Tommy McNamara should be getting released in the next week or two to open up a senior roster spot to bring somebody in.
Yeah, right. I mean, a couple of these questions were about, you know, do you focus on a center forward or, you know, a defensive midfielder or whatever, you know, just based on numbers of it, right? You are looking at a center forward position that is Giacomo Vrioni, an injured Bobby Wood. And realistically, behind that, no one else who plays the position, or at least who plays the position regularly. You could put Tomáš Onkelai in there, but he is injured. You could theoretically put Barrero there. And if we have an injury to Giacomo Vrioni, that's, I imagine, the only place you can go. There aren't really options in terms of players on this that would be a good fit up top. So I think even if you keep Vrioni, even if, you know, you have needs elsewhere, you pull through the rest of the season with just Giacomo Vrioni as your only true center forward on the roster. That just doesn't make sense. So whether that's, you know, finding a trade within the league or leasing a player via buyout to open up the space, you know, it's got to be done, right? Just because this roster is as constructed, cannot withstand, you know, it might not be able to just keeping Giacomo Vrioni up there, but it certainly can't withstand an injury or suspension of Giacomo Vrioni at this point.
No, and the thing is too is we still don't know if that second buyout that doesn't affect the cap is going to happen or not. But either way, in regards to Tommy McNamara, I mean, he's just flat out, he's not going to play for this team ever again. So he either continues to get paid and occupies a roster spot, or he continues to get paid and he doesn't occupy a roster spot. I mean, it's a no-brainer. He's not gonna play for this team again in a game that is still competitive. So just release him. Whether you got to pay him or not, it doesn't matter. You're spending the money either way, but you can get that roster spot back if you let him go. Players are going to become available on July 1st when their European contract runs out. I'm sure they can find someone to take it. You know, to take a swing on for, you know, the usual thing, you know, bring him in for a minimum contract for half a season with an option and a raise, you know, for 2025 and, you know, get somebody else in here. I mean, I don't know why McNamara is still on the team to be honest. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, he's certainly at the top of the list of players that makes the most sense to move off of. If that's, you know, if that's an option that Revs have, even if they don't have it, right? You know, it's he's taken up a roster spot and doesn't seem like he's close to being on the field at any point. One question here from CMag on Twitter that gets into the attack a little bit. So he says, respectable looking soccer, yielding 3 goals and 3 points by the back, but our offensive players have no chemistry in the final third. Is this a roster construction issue, tactics issue, or the coach's inability to select the correct lineup and coach accordingly? So, you know, we did get 3 goals in this game. I mentioned that, though, you know, those 3 goals were scored on just about 1.1 expected goals. Has been, you know, most of the Revs scoring this year has been beating the statistical odds, right? You know, did you see anything from the attack in this game that was good or bad, or and, you know, what do you think the reasons were?
Well, I don't really understand what he's talking about, to be perfectly honest. A good build-up play out of the back. Really? When did that happen? They actually haven't really built out of the back much in recent weeks, and it's been to their benefit. You know, I think 2 out of the 3 goals they won the ball back at midfield. You know, that's not build-up play if you're already halfway there when you win the ball back. So I didn't really see, you know, building out of the back. I mean, the ball movement was quicker, sure. You know, on the goal to Veroni, you know, they started on the right, they worked it over quickly to the left. But as far as the, you know, the offensive players have no chemistry in the final third, I actually don't really agree with that at all. You know, Barrero, once again, you know, I think Barrero had a pretty poor night. But he was able to find Veroni with the one type of pass that Veroni wants, and he scored. Carles, you know, Carles has good chemistry with everybody because he has an understanding of how every single player on the ball wants to receive it and when they want to receive it. Esmer does a good job of keeping himself, you know, hanging out on the right-hand side, so he's an option there. You know, Jones and Barrero have pretty good chemistry on the left-hand side. You know, one goes in, one goes wide. So I don't really understand what he's talking. Odd week to ask that question too, by the way. You know, the offense has no chemistry and they just scored 3 goals in 45 minutes.
Right. Yeah. So I kind of understand where they're coming from, and I also kind of don't, right? Because I think there were times where the ball was moving quickly in a way that I think that Caleb Porter, you know, the ideal version of his system is. You know, there was more one touch passing. You know, Carles Hill was doing more of the thing that makes Carles Hill so great, which is that, you know, he's aware of where everyone is and where everyone is going to be before they're there and before they know what they're doing, really, sometimes. And so he was doing a lot of, or at least a few times, he was getting the ball and just like no look passing directly into space in behind for players to get onto and, you know, and advance the ball that way. So I saw some promising buildup attack. For me, you know, there was that instance where, you know, I think it was, I'm forgetting exactly which two players. I think one of them was Rioni and one of them may have been, was it Barrero or someone else, but they both think they're going for the shot at the same time and they kind of like run into each other and you know, the shot doesn't come off. It's a good opportunity waste.
Yeah.
A real yakety sax moment of soccer playing right there. But you know, so there are bits of that. To me, watching this game, I'm thinking if the Revs had, you know, a center forward who was playing with more confidence or who knew which spots to be in more often, who was less hesitant, you know, a lot of these issues might go away, because I think there are moments where the ball comes in the attack, Frioni gets the ball, and, you know, there's that split second where he's like, oh no, what do I do? And, you know, instead of just having that, like, you know, that brain turned off, you know, ball obviously goes here kind of moment, you know, a lot of the attacks kind of seem to die when he was on the ball.
Yeah. It's just Veroni like getting, right, getting in everyone's way. I mean, that's all it really is.
Right. So, you know, he's saying that there's no chemistry. I don't think that there's no chemistry. I think it's one of the players up there is kind of gumming up the works a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to put it all on Frioni necessarily. You know, I thought he had a couple of you know, decent moments last night. He won the ball in a couple of good spots. I actually thought his holdup looked better than it did the previous week. But there are a lot of times where this, you know, works the ball forward in, you know, in the way that they do when they're at their, and then it ends up at Frioni's feet and it's just kind of like, well, okay, there goes the attack. You know, he gets a goal in this one. He gets the goal doing what, you know, what we know he likes to do and where he likes the ball to come. But yeah, I think a lot of that chemistry or that lack of chemistry kind of is just chalked up to, you know, there's one bit of hesitance in the attack that stops that free flowing play. And that more often than not, in my experience last night was Frioni.
Yeah, and you know, again, it's just kind of an odd time to bring that question up because Veroni was 17 of 20 on his passes last night. I don't know that he's attempted 20 passes in any game all season. And he had 37 touches and 8 touches inside the penalty area. And the team as a whole had, I think it was 48 touches in the penalty area in this game, and they averaged 20. Right. So they got the ball into the other team's penalty area, I think more often than they have in any game all season. They certainly scored more goals than they have all season. And that's even with Veroni kind of sometimes just stumbling around and getting in other players' way. And, you know, and Barrero's, you know, Barrero's end product is really not come back yet either. He had a couple of meek shots again. He had an atrociously bad pass in midfield. I think it was in the first half. Just like super casually, like it looked like a U9 player kicking a ball with their right foot for the first time. But anyway, yeah, I think it's just Barrero's not 100% back yet. And Veroni, you know, he just kind of stumbles around out there.
Right. We have a couple of questions about Caleb. system and whether or not he deserves credit for the win. So I'll run through those quick, and then we can address the top one here on Twitter from Dinsdale. Porter was supposed to play the kids due to injuries. Did they stay in the lineup, or does Porter take credit for his system working and bench them again? A question from Tim on Twitter that said the Revs press was, especially in the first half, often took away Vancouver's first and second options when playing out of the back. Porter deserves credit for that, right? And then a final question here from Mike from New Hampshire on Twitter. Every good thing to happen this year is in spite of Caleb, right? So let's broach the topic. You know, did you think that the win last night, can we attribute that to Caleb Porter's system, or is it just the Revs playing the way that they can in spite of him?
No, Caleb Porter doesn't have a system. Whatever works, he says, is part of the system, and whatever doesn't work, he blames somebody else. Like that's not a system. That's job security. That's all that is. I don't really know that job security is a system to play soccer. But no, look, I mean, we talked about this, you know, you and I talked about this last week, you know, they're going long on goal kicks. They're not using the positional play as much as they have been. They're a transition team, and that isn't what Porter said he wanted this team to be. He's gotten the players that, you know, you remember he was saying, you know, we need 3, 4, 5 pieces. Well, he's found four of them already without having to make a trade. Romney, Buck, Esmer, and who's the other one? And Harkes. I mean, so it turns out, you know, you're sitting around saying, boy, I need like 4 or 5 different players. It's like, well, you actually had them here already. You just weren't willing to give them a chance, or you gave them a chance. Again, like I said before about Romney, you know, he said, oh, Romney wasn't good enough early in the season. It's like, yeah, but you said that we couldn't judge this team based on the early part of the season because you had to play 8 games in 26 days. So, no, right. It's not – Porter doesn't have a system. Porter's system is job security and nothing more.
Right. Yeah. So I would say that Porter has a preferred system, and that preferred system did not work even a little bit. And so, you know, I don't know if this is to his credit or, you know, in spite of his best efforts, but the Revs have been playing differently now to the way they did to start the season, and it has been more effective. So whatever he was trying to get done clearly didn't work. So either he's adjusted and is just kind of playing more to the strength, which I think we would have shouted at him to do at the beginning of the year, or, you know, he's just taking credit for the things that are working that the players are doing, and then, you know, reinforcing those in training. I'm not sure, but you know, we have like 12 straight weeks of the Revs playing, you know, kind of a plodding, slow, possession oriented style that generates no chances in the attack and is very vulnerable defense. And so to say that, you know, all of a sudden the last couple of games, his system is really switched on while also looking, you know, fairly different, doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
All right. So we have, you know, we're getting kind of the points of the questions here where we've answered a lot of them already. So I will mention some people's names on Twitter when they ask questions, but if I answered it, I might just say that we've kind of covered it. There is one here from Connor Magliozzi. I'm hoping I'm getting that right. Connor, you can let me. Which gets to the question we were just asking. So he says, am I getting ahead of myself, or did this team figure things out? That's, you know, the team probably hasn't figured things out, right? We're still not generating a ton of, you know, expected goals chances, but I think that there has been some recognition, at least somewhere, that you can't continue to play the way that they started the season with, which is that, you know, they're taking more advantage of long balls, they're taking more advantage of balls in behind, and trying to generate the attack more directly, in spite of what said early in the season, which was that he was trying to do that while continuously rolling out a team that that didn't do that week after week. But figured it out? No, I think they knew this all along. I just think that it's, you know, it has been working, so you stick with what works.
Yeah, I think the players have known what they are capable of all along. Just it's taken Porter a little bit longer to figure that out, a little bit longer than the players. And, you know, to be honest, if Twitter had been picking his lineup, you know, we might have been at this point, you know, 3-4 weeks ago.
Yep. That's fair. He should just hand over the reins to Rev's Twitter.
Yeah, just let us crowdsource the starting 11.
Right. Okay, Mile Bill Davison on Twitter just says, wow, I don't know what else to say. I'll echo that. Wow, sounds good. All right, we have a question from Nate on Twitter. We've kind of covered this one, but do you think Harkes starts over K next week, assuming both are healthy? I think kind of hope that he will, as to whether or not the continuity piece of Caleb Porter's, you know, mindset will take over, and we'll see kind of that same, you know, central midfield that we've been seeing will come back. But it would make sense to roll with last night, considering it was probably one of the better games we've seen from the Revs all year. Porter on Twitter just asks, are we back? What do you think, Tom? Are we back?
Unfortunately, you know, things were so bad earlier in the year that, you know, they're still in last place. So, you know, but right. Look, I mean, they're only, they're only 4 points out of a playoff spot, and they have a game in hand, at least one game in hand over everybody in front of them. So they're certainly in a much better position than they were 3 weeks ago, but back yet. No, I think, you know, actually being in a playoff spot, which is going to take, you know, is going to take, you know, I don't know, two or three more weeks. And then I think we can say that, the team is back where they were last season, right? Which is a playoff level team. Not quite there yet.
Sure. Well, Robert Chevalier on Twitter disagree with you. He says we're so back, no question. So I'll let you guys have that debate offline.
Just watch next week's game against Cincinnati. And
right. Yeah. I mean, that'll be a different kind of test. You know, certainly good to get three wins in a row. One of those was on the road, so you like that. But, you know, it might be a different story heading on the road to Cincinnati next week for sure. Jesse Marks on Twitter says he was shut down mentally on those two goals. I think we both agree. Do we know what non-injury reason has made Ravas unavailable? I believe he was called up to the national team for the Euros, so that's why he wasn't available on the bench for this one. Is that correct, Tom?
Yeah. He's at the Euros.
All right. Question here. This one is kind of related to stadium stuff. So John Stafford says, with each win, the Forder and the fans are re-energized. Resale tickets are up somewhat, but still below face value. Actual attendance tonight was the lowest in several. So I guess that's more of a comment on the stadium atmosphere. You know, have you felt like the stadium atmosphere has improved the last couple of games?
Yeah, I mean, the crowd was actually a little bit small, not a little bit. The crowd was definitely smaller last night than it was the week before. Like, you know, the season ticket holders get an email kind of like letting you know, hey, try and get there early because it's a big crowd. That wasn't in this week's email. And, you know, no, it was a decent crowd last night. But look, I mean, there was, you know, there was four goals in the first half and five goals in the game. And, you know, that's going to keep people engaged. You know, the Fort, I mean, I don't know, the Fort actually looked like it was like two thirds empty last night. And again, like I know that a lot of people think that the supporters section is really, you know, critically important and so on and so forth. But I honestly really, I'm so sick and tired of like them saying the F word. It's like, it's just like, it's the same songs that they've been singing for 12 years. It's like the novelty of like, we can say the F word in public and like, it's just such a bore. Like, can you stop swearing? Like, no one's impressed by swearing. Like, unless you're like a sophomore in high school, and none of them look like sophomores in high school. So yeah, I don't know. The atmosphere was fine, but you know, to be honest, the Fort, I don't know. I don't really get excited about the Fort.
Sure. Yeah. Right. A smaller crowd last night, but listen, goals and wins are going to get people more excited than, you know, what we were watching earlier in the season, which was a home loss after home loss. So certainly I think probably better energy last night than usual. I think we have two more questions that we can touch on. Actually, before I forget, there is one more email question, which is from Owen Gio on by email, which just says, will Porter start the kids next? I think we both certainly hope that that Buck gets another look, because I think we were both, impressed with how he played. In terms of whether or not Esmer will get another rollout, I think that's probably a little bit more likely, just based upon the injuries to wingers on the roster. So I think we've kind of covered that. A question here from No Screamer Fuss as kind of the last one before we close out, Tom. Why do we have so many hamstring/knee injuries this year? Is it just bad luck, or is it the fitness level and training? So any thoughts on the injuries?
I really don't understand why players that are like not playing are picking up muscle injuries in training. And unfortunately, with Porter, there's a statement that about everything. He said that, these types of injuries can be prevented. If you're paying attention to, the sports science and your physical periodization, he said flat out in his introductory press conference that, soft tissue muscle injuries can actually be prevented. And if you're seeing a lot of those happen, you're doing something wrong. I would love for someone to put that back to him and see if he can handle that question. Cause I would love to hear how he would talk that down. I mean, I believe like Ryan Spaulding picked up his injury in training. Mensah was out for a little bit. Obviously he didn't pick that up while he was playing, cause he barely plays. McNamara has an injury, which is, I think he's played 3 minutes this season. So for him to have an injury is remarkable. I don't know. I mean, Porter, like many, many things, Porter talked a big, big game about being able to prevent injuries. And that clearly hasn't been the case. I mean, it's just been one after another out with muscle injuries. So, yeah, I don't know. I would love to get some sort of explanation as to what they can come up with as to why that's happening.
Right. Yep. Injuries kind of always a part of the game. It was always weird to me that at the beginning of the year, he came out so strongly indicating that there was something that he could do to prevent them, because there's no real upside to him saying that, because either, you don't have a lot of injuries and nobody remembers it, or a lot of injuries and everybody points to that exact moment where you said you could stop that from happening. So it was a weird thing for him to come out and say, but the number of injuries we've had this year has been tough, and it's been like this for a couple of years, right? The Revs have had high impact injuries that have affected them for years and years. So, certainly not great to have, but not out of the realm of recent history. Okay, Tom, let's wrap. Do you have any final thoughts? Do you have anything in the works for the Blazing Musket, and where can people follow you on social media?
My final thought is, again, it was a good time last night. Great to see the three goals. The attacking play, it looked pretty good. You can kind of understand they didn't get another goal in the second half, and they were kind of just knocking the ball around a little bit, not really going anywhere with it. But there's a big difference when, you're up by two goals and you're just trying to kill the game off by knocking the ball around. There's a big difference between that and, knocking the ball around, not going anywhere in a 0-0 game. So I think, all in all, they had a good game from start to finish against a good, against a good team. We haven't been able to say that all season. Now it's two really, really tough games coming up now. They've got to go away to Cincinnati, who are in second place. And then they are home again in 2 weeks' time against the Columbus Crew. So, trying to get anything out of those games is going to be really, really tough. But I think that would be another sign that the team is starting around in a good form. Even if they get, 3 points, maybe even one. If they lose to Cincinnati and they tie the Crew, it's a little deflating to only get 1 point from six. But given the competition, I think even that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. You can find me on Twitter at TeepinZone343. And for the Blazing Musket this week, I'll have my Q2 analyst report. That'll come out. There's some there's some other analysts that have contributed their their expectations for points per game for Q3 and Q4. And Porter himself actually helped us out quite a bit. Porter is really taking the CEO thing a little too seriously, because he has actually put it out there that he is targeting 15 points from the next 9 games. So he's targeting 1.66 points per game, kind of like earnings per share, for Q3. So we'll factor all that into our Q2 report, and that'll be out probably on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it. And I'll echo some of your final thoughts here. It's a tough 2 games coming up here between next week at Cincinnati and then a home game against Columbus. You know, so if the Revs are going to have any chance of on this momentum, they're going to want to get something out of those games. Or, you know, if they're not going to win, they're going to at least want to get a point or at least show signs of life if they can continue going. After that, it does seem like it eases up a little bit. The Revs are home against Atlanta. Atlanta's been kind of down this season and mostly down. They have fired their head coach earlier this year. It's Seattle Sounders after that, which of course is a tough road game, West Coast game for travel reasons, but Seattle's kind of been, you know, not this year so far. And then Orlando, who's also not been the best, and then Philadelphia. And Philadelphia, we actually have more wins than Philadelphia does right now. I think you probably watch both these teams and think that is not true. But it only has 4 wins on the season. So, you know, there are some gettable games after this stretch. So the next 2 weeks will be critically important to get out of and keep building on this 3-game win streak momentum. You can follow me on Twitter/BlueSky/Threads at Revs Nation. And of course, you can follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Revolution Recap. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And be sure to check out our friends at the Blazing Musket. Thanks again for listening to Revolution Recap, presented by Bet Online. And we'll be back next week with another podcast.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture, and the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.